Hello and welcome to Archaeology News Weekly from a snowy Scotland. I am, of course, your host, David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see Stone Pages at news.stonepages.com. Let's start with 8,270-year-old human bones being found in Argentina, then to a murder mystery with a Turkish skeleton found with an arrow tip in its spine. Amazing prehistoric footprints are found on a British beach, continuing to amaze people, including myself, of course. And there's a review of Chatelhuoc made more accessible with 3D imaging. Climate change, learning from the past. We report on an American climate model. And Australian fire starters. Well, man's influence seems last to be confirmed, but not until the Europeans get there. Burial cairn is found at a nuclear dump site in Scotland, and then we go for a more sedate evening walk in Stonehenge in 2011, so get booking. The oldest mine in the Americas is found in Chile, and the lake city of Dolavira from the Indus Valley Civilization is investigated. There's a short report of 4,000-year-old buildings and many other finds unearthed in Syria. And finally, a rather unusual article on Iranian rock tombs destroyed by explosives. Remember, you can also be listening to this on the Stone Pages Archaeo News app, as well as keeping up with the news as it happens. So, starting off today's podcast, and I also have to tell you, it is my birthday, so it's a special pleasure to be bringing you this podcast on my, wait for it, 45th birthday. I don't feel a day over 45. Anthropologists have found 8,270-year-old human skeletal remains on a lakeside beach in the central province of Santa Fe in Argentina. The remains were found together with the bones of guanacos, an animal resembling a llama, from 7,000 years ago, and ceramics between 1,500 to 2,300 years old. The scientists from the National University of Rosario originally made the find in 2003, when heavy flooding from the lake left the remains on the surface. They had initially placed the data between 500 to 3,000 years old. The remains were then sent to a US laboratory in Arizona that discovered that the age was far greater than the Argentinian archaeologists had previously thought. The remains are now the oldest material recovered in that province to date. The scientists are now carrying out further research to determine to which native group the skeletal remains belong to. Now to Turkey. The body of a man with an arrow tip still lodged in his spine was found during ongoing excavations. Archaeologists believe that the man died shortly after he was shot. The man appears to have been in his 30s from the early Chalcolithic period, which did not seem unusual at first glance. On closer examination, however, a deep arrow wound was discovered in the bottom of his spine. The team also noted that the arrow tip was made of flint and was lodged some 12 millimetres into his spine. It's most likely that the arrow struck it and damaged the abdominal aorta, which is located near the path of the arrow. It would also indicate that the man died shortly after he was injured. It would seem reasonable to suggest that he was injured not far from the village, taken back there and died shortly afterwards. The site, whose history stretches back about 8,500 years, is one of the earliest farming villages in the world. Nearly 60 tombs have so far been discovered during excavations, which were launched 7 years ago, with the support of the Bursa Metropolitan Municipality. Well, now they've added a murder mystery to the archaeology. Another mystery, though, but quite an interesting one, over here in the UK. More prehistoric human footprints have been found along a 4 kilometre strip of coast between Formby and Ainsdale in England that date back some 5,000 years. Archaeologists dubbed the discovery sensational, claiming it's one of the most significant historic footprints finds Britain has ever seen. Over the last few weeks, volunteers have been scouring the sand dunes and have struck it lucky with their latest findings. Marine scientists explained that the beaches are now receding, causing layers of sand and sediment to disperse, and thus exposing land that has lain undisturbed for thousands of years. Mysterious footprints have been found in the area since the 1950s, but the latest find also shows that deer, cattle and birds from the Bronze Age once roamed the area as well. And Mr. Roberts, who's now 81 years old, was the first person to take an active role in studying the footprints way back in 1989. He devised his own system of monitoring and tracking the prints by location. Footprints from aurochs have also been found, which was a ferocious 6-foot-high tall breed of cattle that is now extinct. I've actually had a good look at this site as well, and it is absolutely amazing. You can see the imprints of feet preserved as if it had only happened a few hours before you get there. Anyway, Andrew Brockbank, countryside manager for the National Trust, explained that throughout different periods of history, there were animals in Formby coming down to the water's edge. As the coastline was building, their footprints became locked in the sediments of baked hard sand. Now that the coastline is receding, it's beginning to uncover the sediments, which sadly soon wash away forever. Dr. Mark Adams, Senior Archaeological Project Officer at the Museum of Liverpool, is involved with the Sefton Coast Partnership, who's investigating Formby's dunes. Just a few weeks ago, they found between 5 and 10 trails of human footprints alongside red deer prints. They're wanting to get more local people involved to help find more prints and are looking to organise archaeology training sessions for next year. If you visit news.stonepages.com, you'll find the links and phone numbers in order to get involved with the project. And now, in a new techno kind of archaeology twist, the Archaeology of California at Merced Collegian Library in the USA took up 2 whole floors to host a unique exhibit, which just concluded last week. The library showed a collection of artifacts from the Anatolian Neolithic village of Çatalhöyük in Turkey, one of the first places to show evidence of the development of agriculture. What made this exhibit different from most of the others is the fact that this one consisted solely of 3D reconstructions of the village's artifacts. It's an approach that attracted global attention to the school. During their last excavation season, Professor Forte and his students employed 2 large format 3D laser scanners and several handheld ones to gather the data used to build the exhibit. This approach lends to the ability not only to educate students outside the field and the public, but to make the communication between experts more effective. How much more likely would it be that a pottery expert could identify a piece of pottery from a 3D print than from a photo or perhaps a drawing? 3D scanning has the potential to retain the object in situ. The amount of technology that the students brought was not insubstantial. In fact, it was $500 million worth of equipment, including 3 laser scanners and 3 additional scanners for smaller artifacts. I could do some of that funding. Anyway, as we all know, modern climate change is a conscientious subject. Sorry, not conscientious. I'm sure it is conscientious, but it's a contentious subject as well. But we may be able to learn some lessons from the past. Archaeologists from the University of Ottawa in Canada have been studying data from sites ranging from Maine to Pennsylvania in the USA. They've taken the prehistory of North America and divided it into 3 main periods. The Paleo-Indian period, that's around 12,500 to 9,250 BCE. The Archaic, from 9,250 to 6,200 BCE. And the Woodland period, from 6,200 to just 1,000 BCE. They noted that through the study of radiocarbon dates, pollen and charcoal records, that as the climate changed from cold to warm, so did the flora and fauna. Along with this, hunting implements were modified or abandoned to cope with the changes in the animals being hunted. During these climate changes, humans also evolved from nomadic hunters in colder spells to semi-nomadic hunters of smaller animals and fishes, and also to static farmers as the climate warmed. While not stating that there's a direct link between climate change and culture change, the researchers argue that toolkits were modified in response to these changes. Brian Schumann, a paleoclimatologist from the University of Wyoming in the USA, is reported as saying that a major cultural transition happened right when the major climate and ecological transitions take place. He feels that this has been supported by other findings as well. Others, however, are more sceptical, such as Anthony Brown, a paleoenvironmentalist at the University of Southampton in the UK, who labels the results and correlations as problematic. Of course, you're never going to get everyone to agree about everything. That's the way it goes. In continuing climate change stories, and across in what might be a lovely warm Australia, a new study by a team of 19 scientists headed by paleoecologist Dr. Scott Mooney of the University of New South Wales indicates that Australia's earliest settlers, who arrived around 50,000 years ago, did not significantly increase the fire activity on the continent, although the arrival of Europeans from 1788 onwards did. The results of the study, which correlated charcoal records from 223 sites with the archaeological record, go against the commonly held view that Aboriginal fire caused vegetation change and other environmental effects. Dr. Mooney notes that while this may seem contrary to prior studies, it should be remembered that it is only very recently that enough charcoal records have become available on a continental scale to analyse them with any robust statistical technique. Rather than human influence, the researchers suggest that Australian fire activity reflects and was driven by changes in the climate, with less activity in glacial periods and more in the warmer interglacial periods. This report was actually published in the recent Journal of Quaternary Science Reviews. Now, here at home in Scotland, a large Bronze Age burial cairn has been uncovered at the site of a proposed £100 million nuclear waste dump on the north coast of Caithness. Archaeologists found no remains in the cairn or in its central kist, which suggests that the 4,000-year-old site at Dounreay had already previously been robbed of its artefacts in the past. An archaeological survey was made of the whole area ahead of construction work on the store for low-level radioactive waste. And council approved plans for the dump back in 2009, and it will now be constructed on a former military airfield. I have to say, happy days from when I was part of a team that had to record the castle at Dounreay Nuclear Power Station. First time I've ever had to record a radioactive site, and I certainly hope it's going to be my last, but at least it's still keeping me warm today. We often have stories about Stonehenge, and I'm afraid today is no exception. The Wiltshire Heritage Museum is organising a series of evening walks at Stonehenge, led by director David Dawson. This is a wonderful opportunity to inspect, of course with no touching, and photograph the stones more closely, and to see the inscriptions, including the famous dagger, believed to date from the Bronze Age period. During the visit, Mr. Dawson will point out the main features of the circle, along with the cycle of its construction and rebuilding during the Bronze Age. At the same time, you'll be allowed to wander at the will inside the circle and enjoy the landscape as a whole. The first visit is scheduled for June the 8th, 2011, and there'll be another evening visit on the 13th of July. Booking, of course, will be essential, so please contact the booking secretary to have a chance to get on this evening walk. Now we're going to go to Chile, where we might remember some recent stories about mining. Well, here is an ancient one. Archaeologists have discovered a 12,000-year-old iron oxide mine, making it the oldest mine discovered in the Americas to date. The iron oxide mine at the, I'll never get this one right, Huentalaquen Indians was used as a pigment in dyeing cloth and in religious rituals, revealing an unsuspected sophistication in what was previously considered a primitive group of people. The ancient mine was discovered near the town of Taltal, 1,100 kilometres north of Santiago. It was originally discovered in October 2008, but its antiquity was not determined until tests were conducted this year in the US and Polish laboratories. Named San Ramon 15, the mine was exploited from around 10,000 to 2,000 BCE. It yielded a total of 2,000 tonnes of pigment. Experts have also found a treasure trove of stone and conch mining tools in the area, including 1,000 hammer stones. But considering the amount of material they've still to sift through, the real number could rise into the several of thousands. Before this find, the oldest mine in the Americas was the 2,500-year-old copper mines found in Michigan. The world's most ancient mine, however, is still in South Africa, dated to 40,000 years ago. The Indus Valley Civilization, dating from 3300 to 1300 BCE, was centred mostly in the western part of the Indian subcontinent, which is now Pakistan, and it flourished around the Indus River Basin. Dolavira is an incredible example of the Indus Valley Civilization's town. Archaeologists believe that this ancient town must have been a beautiful city of lakes in its heyday. In fact, the residents of Dolavira, who had settled in the town between the two water streams, collected their waters in the monsoon and used that for the rest of the year with clever water storage facilities and techniques. The New Delhi-based Centre for Science and Technology believes that ancient Dolavira has a lot to teach us about water collection, usage and storage today. The curator of Pennsylvania University Museum, Gregory Posow, says that Dolavira, exactly like planned modern cities of today, was constructed to a design, and like the other towns of the Indus Valley civilization, the overall shape is based upon a It's one of these words I unfortunately can't say, so I'm going to try and say parallelogram, or perhaps I should just say rhombus. Anyway, that's the shape it was based on. The wall of the citadel is a remarkable 18 metres thick. Buildings in Dolavira were made of sun-dried mud bricks and stone, some of them still standing, even today. The refinement of buildings and materials used reveals a high knowledge of civil engineering that must have been prevalent amongst the Indus culture. Ornaments made of lapis lazuli, agate, carnelian, shells, silver and gold, as well as domestic utensils and toys made from clay, reveal a high artistic and technological sense. The wells and street architecture, including drains, speak of the technological sophistication of these people. Unfortunately, the script of the Indus Valley civilization remains yet to be deciphered. Well, that's maybe something for 2011. A number of archaeological digs in Syria have ended their work for this current season, and the finds have been numerous. The Syrian-French archaeological mission at the site of Tal Faras in northeastern Syria unearthed a number of buildings dating back to the 4th millennium BCE, and under those lay another building from the 5th millennium. The finds include pottery kilns as well. In Tal Mohammed Daib, the French archaeological mission found a cemetery with graves, pottery and a bronze spearhead and axe dating back to the Middle Bronze Age, and the Syrian European archaeological mission, working at Tal Baidar, discovered the southern courtyard of a temple and houses dating back to 2,500 BCE. Lastly, in Tal Taban, the Japanese archaeological mission found walls, buildings and archaeological remnants from the Middle Assyrian and Babylonian periods. Some of the discoveries included a seal and a clay tablet with cuneiform inscription. And finally, some tragic news, I'm afraid. The only known reliefs and rock tombs in the Baghmalek district in Iran, known as Rudno, have been destroyed with explosives. The reason for the destruction remains, however, unknown. Despite the importance and uniqueness of the site, it has never been registered on Iran's National Heritage List. Bakhtiari nomads living in the area initially reported the news of the destruction to the Khuzestan Friends of the Cultural Heritage Association. The media has blamed smugglers for the destruction, who were allegedly searching for treasures. However, the evidence suggests otherwise. The explosives were placed over two low reliefs, which have both consequently been completely destroyed, and there's now no longer any evidence of their existence. The actual rock tombs themselves are located approximately 3 meters higher. These were not damaged, so it seems the intention was not the destruction of the tombs or entry to find looted treasures, but in fact the destruction of the reliefs. In recent years, the pre-Islamic heritage sites of the province have been subjected to a series of organised vandalisms. What separates Rudno from other rock tombs in the area was its reliefs. In this area, the rock tombs have usually been dated to the Parthian dynasty, from around 248 BCE to 224 CE. So although this rock tomb dates to the Parthian dynasty, a 63-centimetre tall relief carved on one of the tombs was puzzling, because the relief had an Achaemenid hairstyle, a Parthian outfit and boots, but was standing in an unfamiliar posture, holding an unknown object. And now, I'm afraid, we will never know. History, thanks to archaeology, is always rewriting itself. Apparently this is quite threatening to certain people, so they feel that destroying the evidence is the only viable solution. Well, let me tell you, it's not. Archaeologists will continue to search for and discover our common histories. Archaeology is all about finding out the facts and not fitting into other people's, shall we say, truths. Don't forget, of course, that our news is available on the iPhone, iPod, Touch and iPad. So you can find that at www.stonepages.com/app. And if you haven't already, get yourself along to Past Horizons. It has had such a major revamp, you won't recognize it. You will love it. Up-to-date news, articles, videos, and of course, archaeological tools. www.pasthorizons.com. Can I also remind you that many, well, not that many now, new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities, as well as a heritage calendar, library, guidance sections, and so much more can be found on Badger, www.bajr.org. And more can always be found at Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. Well, it just goes for me to say a very happy Christmas to you all. Thank you so much for listening to Archaeology News Weekly over this past year. We hope, of course, you'll return to us again, where I will be attempting to put up another podcast in around about a week's time. But I will raise a glass of whatever you like to you all. Wish you a happy Christmas and see you again soon.